Armbar, I just got back the odd copy from our sponsors. Can you do the read for me?
Oh, boss, you know I can't read.
Right, right. Oh, look, it's Doubletail. Barry, can you spare a minute?
Sure, what's up? Also, I'm pretty sure I asked you not to call me Barry.
Well, Barry, our sponsors gave us this ad copy to read, and unfortunately our friend Armbar here can't read, so can you do the promo for us?
Sure thing. Hey there, sports fans. Baragon Doubletail here to remind you Bard Rock Cafe is brought to you by Dragon Master Games. Shop at their online storefront for your D&D and TTRPG products, as well as collectibles. We're now also partnered with FanRoll, who make high-quality dice sets, dice bags, trays and towers, and other accessories. Follow our affiliate link and use code BARDROCKCAFE at checkout to save 10%, and a portion of your order goes to support the show. Finally, you can also support the show directly by subscribing to our Ko-fi. Subscribers get access to wild rewards like exclusive bonus content, tarot readings from Rook, social media shoutouts, and tabletop games with the cast. As always, all the relevant links can be found in the show notes. Now, let's rock.
Support the show, or I'ma come near ya.
You can't threaten your listeners.
It's not a threat. It's a promise. Support the show, jabronis.
Hello, and welcome to a special Bard Rock Cafe miniseries, For Whom the Bell Tolls. I'm Paul, and I will be your dungeon master for this adventure. We saw in a previous podcast episode, planes are being purged from existence. In this miniseries, we're going to follow a group of adventurers trying to escape one of those such planes, the Abyss. Before we jump into the story so far, I'd like to go around and introduce our players and their characters, starting with Meg. Meg, can you please tell the audience a little bit about yourself and the character you'll be playing?
Hi, my name is Maggie. This is my absolute first time playing Dungeons & Dragons. Please be patient with me. I am utterly confused and old. I am playing Megara. She is a fighter with a mysterious past. She's a wanderer with a lot of past misdeeds that she's making up for by lending her aid in any honorable quest she can join.
Fantastic. We also have, returning from the one shot we did for Rook's background, we have Dylan. He will not be reprising the role of XR, though.
It was SR, yeah.
SR. Sorry, I did not enunciate well.
Ah, despite popular demand, I am back. This is my 3700th game of D&D. I have dice and I have paper character sheets, and I'm also old. Today I am playing Prefect Lysander Carrix. He is a human member of the Army of Kania, the eighth layer of the Nine Hells. He's here in the Abyss as part of the Department of Special Weapons and Tactics 44th Expeditionary Force. He's a human wizard here to test new weaponry and spells against his demonic enemies in the Blood War.
And then, of course, we have my two regular cast members who are joining us for this. Khadija?
Hey, yeah, that's me, Khadija. I typically play the teenage rogue Rook. But this time I'm here as Tina Chris Fistpump, the dwarven paladin. She goes by Tina, though. And she is in the Abyss with a troop of paladins set to recover an ancient artifact. She's a very ambitious young woman, top of her class, and she is here to get her job done.
And last, but certainly not least, Tenzai.
Oh, please don't. I am the least. It's fine. Hi, everybody. I'm Tensei. This is my negative 47th game of D&D. Happy to be here. I will be playing returning NPC Muck from much earlier in the campaign. He was a lemur that was summoned and accidentally summoned through wild magic, accidentally banished through regular magic, and wants to come back to the material plane on a quest of revenge. And we've made him a plasmoid monk just for ease because I don't want to homebrew something.
Thank you all so much for playing, and I hope we all have a good time. Without further ado, I'm just going to dive right in. They came from the Abyss, destroying it from the bottom up. Which was impressive, because the Abyss is supposed to have infinite layers. How does one go about destroying infinity, you have to wonder? A few were able to escape or survive nonetheless. As it turns out, none of you did. At least not the first time around. Your last memories are of you dying moments, simply ceasing to exist as reality crumbled all around you. And then suddenly, you're whole again. Just a pop, and you're back where there was nothing left before. You're not where you left off either. Regardless of wherever you were in the Abyss the first time, you find yourselves in a courtyard, outside a magnificent portcullis gate, glowing with purple necrotic energy. Around you are peculiar stone structures forming a circle, with the portcullis in the northern center of the circle. Above you, for lack of a better word, is a hole in reality. What do you all do?
I'm going to look at the hole in reality and attempt to discern its nature.
Alright, go ahead and roll investigation.
Alright. So that is a total of 23.
Ooh.
All right, with the 23, you recognize this as specifically a hole in time, known as a fractal. You see bits and pieces of like what you recognize to be like the past, like some events you recognize from like major history, your personal history, just like warp fragments that seem to be occurring out of order. You also see what you determine to be probably the future. You also realize you should not stare at a fractal for this long. Go ahead and roll a wisdom saving throw.
Alrighty. Less impressive. That's an 11.
All right, with an 11, you are going to take 1d6 of psychic damage. Let me just pull out my digital roller.
Hey, I can roll my own psychic damage.
No, the DM rolls damage on you on this podcast, sir.
Fine.
You take a crispy 1 psychic damage.
All right, I'll allow it.
All right, do you share this information with the group of presumably strangers around you?
So I guess I'm going to behold them briefly and then ask the Lemur in Infernal to identify himself, or itself, rather.
Mock.
That was not as informative as Carrick had hoped for.
Tina springs into action, and she takes a look at the whole group. She's very concerned. Very concerned.
Is now a good time to describe what we look like?
Yeah, sure. What does Kadisha's character see as she looks around this ragtag group? You volunteered first, Dylan.
I didn't pre-write this at all, and I'm not reading from a script. Prefect Carrix is a slim human man dressed in a crisp black uniform with icy blue edging. Its once pristine surface is now marred with blood, ash, and unidentifiable substances. The shimmer of a mage armor spell is barely visible. Still gleaming on his chest is an infernal silver insignia. On his belt is a sheathed dagger and a series of pouches made of otherworldly leather. Behind him floats an ethereal book with a disembodied fountain pen hovering over it.
All right, so that is Lysander. Lysander is his first name or last name?
So Lysander is his first name. Carrix is his last name. Prefect is his rank.
All right, what do I refer to him as?
Prefect. You would call him Carrix or the Prefect. He prefers the other characters to just address him as Prefect.
Okay.
Yeah, you can call him Carrix. That's fine.
What? I'm sorry.
C-A-R-E-X.
Thank you. I was like, carrots?
Carrix is a genus of weed, I believe, but it's a cool Latin-y sounding name, so that's what we went with.
A not plural carrots orange, yes.
No.
What does Muck look like for the audience?
Muck looks like the Pokemon Muck, but like 3 feet tall. That's it. It's real simple. Purple and more different purple pile of sludge.
I was going to say, is it Alolan Muk or like the regular one?
Regular, because I don't know what Alolan Muk looks like.
He's all rainbow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, is Gay Pride Muk. Okay.
Yes, Gay Pride Muk. How about Megara?
I'm my character. Yes, she's a tiefling. I see she's got dark blue skin with horns. And dark black hair, and she's carrying a morning star and a rapier, and she's here to mess people up. Maybe her armor's covered in blood.
Yeah, you guys are all in the Abyss. This checks out.
Yeah, I assumed we would all be roughed up from whatever happened here, so that's included.
I didn't know that I was going to die immediately. I figured I'd die first, but not just like in the first 5 minutes. Yeah.
It's more like you died in an abandoned timeline. Like, you have vague memories of dying, but like nothing concrete. Yeah, kind of like oh shit, that was uncomfortable.
Yeah, so she's Megara's a little confuzzled, confused after briefly dying as well.
Now that she's done observing everyone else, what does Tina look like for the audience?
Tina is a stocky, short dwarf, maybe even a little bit shorter and I'd say a little bit slimmer than a dwarf typically is, but still compared to a human being, still stocky and tough looking. She has like tan skin, she's got dark hair, thick eyebrows, very determined look on her face. She's wearing chainmail that looks pretty fancy. It has like a design that has like hammers and like an anvil on it within the design. She has javelins strapped to her back. She's got a big shield, and she also has a warhammer in her hand, and she seems to be glaring at the prefect and Muck in particular, and her hand is very tightly held on that warhammer right now.
Just wanted to add, you know, I forgot to add that Megara is tall. Let's say 6'5", just tall as hell and like built like a brick shithouse. Yeah.
Tieflings are kind of short. Just
damn it.
No, it's fine. That means you're just a really jacked tiefling.
That's what
like
I want to be a jacked tiefling.
I mean, it depends on what your extra planar ancestry is, right? So Prefect Carex is going to look over the tiefling and try and determine her extraplanar ancestry. You want me to roll Arcana?
Yep, absolutely.
A pathetic roll, but I have a high bonus, 15.
All right, the 15, you recognize certain similarities, albeit not the devilish skin color, of the archdevil Moloch. With a 15, I'll also give you, Moloch is known particularly for being a powerful archdevil, one that challenged Asmodeus for control of the Nine Hells, but failed to do so and was relegated to relatively low stature in the Nine Hells after the fact. He still had a decent amount of power, but he was not high, like, social standing because he got put in his place by Asmodeus.
Mm. Would Carex remember what his relationship is to Mephistopheles?
I don't, so no.
All right. I guess it's beyond Carex's notice, as he's more of a day-to-day kind of guy.
Tina is looking at an abyssal creature and someone who just managed to speak to the abyssal creature. And while she knows some abyssal from her studies before this trip, she's very concerned.
That was actually infernal that I used to speak with him.
Oh, you said it. I heard you say abyssal, even though you probably said infernal. My brain took it.
Carex is also going to do a customary Nine Hells greeting in infernal as a sort of test to this tiefling.
Maggie, go ahead and roll like history to see if you have any fucking clue what Carex is doing.
Okay, so I rolled a dirty 20.
So with a dirty 20, you know exactly what the fuck he's doing. You know the pomp and circumstances of all this. Whether or not you want to like show him you know that is up to you, but you know exactly what he's doing.
I want to show him that I know exactly what he's trying to do.
All right, both of you roll performances. You can do this infernal greeting better.
Okay. Can I have advantage because I live in the Nine Hells?
Only if she can have advantage because she was born of a family from the Nine Hells.
Sure, go for it.
You can both have advantages. That means roll twice.
14 and a 1. That's why advantage is important.
Yep, so 14. Maggie, you're going to roll performance, which is just going to be the d20 plus, if you're not proficient in it, your charisma bonus.
No! I got a 4.
That is actually a natural 1 in roll 20. It is a 1 plus 3, so that is relevant. So first of all, you do it, but you're super clumsy, and Carex probably judges you.
Judges you harshly, though whether you can tell that is a separate issue.
This is actually a perfect segue. So, Meggy, I need you to roll 2d100.
Okay, yeah, 6593.
All right, so what happens? Paul scrolls through a PDF to the F section. One moment. And we got a natural 1, so you're going to get the worst of these two results. That would be a good result. This is a neutral result. For the next hour, your dominant hand switches sides. You just suddenly become very clumsy wielding your Morningstar and realize you need to hold it in the other hand.
Okay.
I will say that, like, for Bard Rock Cafe regulars, normally there's no visual cue that wild magic happens. There's actually, like, an aura around you all when this happens. So, like, you watch, like, a dim aura kind of surround Megara as her hand becomes clumsy. Oh, yes, that. Oh, you actually have, like, a guy walk in. He's like, oh, good, it worked. The voice of an old man speaks to you seemingly out of nowhere. I wasn't sure it would. Time's a tricky thing, you see. I don't normally mess with it, but some fool devil already pried the door open for me, and these are desperate times. Don't worry about that, by the way. That's the magic weave of the universe is kind of broken right now because bad things happened in the land of the gods. So sometimes wonky magic's going to happen. You can't really control it. Just kind of roll with it. That's kind of what he says to Megara.
So I switch my dominant hand with the big-ass Morningstar. What do I do? Like, what am I doing now? Is everyone staring at me because I'm clumsy as hell? Like, what's
what kind of? You have a glow on you.
Yeah, I feel like everyone's staring at the random old man who just appeared out of nowhere without any of you seeing this. Like, you see before you all, this guy has pale skin and wrinkled flesh and a gnarled cane, garbed in rags with a tangled white beard and rotted teeth. He hobbles toward the center of your makeshift group. Something not of this world is destroying the abyss, or will soon. I managed to pull you all back here just before it all started. But that won't buy us much time. The name's Zar. Pleased to meet you.
Where exactly is here? Says Tina, finally opening her mouth.
Oh, this is one of the layers of the abyss. You all were on the abyss before. This is actually Baphomet's lair. He's like the Minotaur guy with the maze.
This is going to be tiresome, says Carix.
But yeah, that's just random magic. It's been happening more and more since the thing happened. You'll learn more about the thing later. It's very tiresome, but basically there's a thing trying to kill the gods, and it's also trying to eat the abyss, which is why we need to get the fuck out of here. So while I do wish we had time for pleasantries, we really don't have to, so I'm going to cut to the chase. This plane is starting to collapse. Any normal attempts to open a portal or plane shift out of here are failing. Fortunately, there is a powerful magical artifact here in the abyss that can do just the trick. I know one of you got stuck here searching for it, and he points his gnarled cane at you, Tina.
Yes, and you must have separated me from my troop, and I want to get back to them, thank you very much.
Well, separated is kind of I'd say that's a misnomer, dear. I can only save one of you. The hole in time was only big enough for one of you. There's kind of like a temporal duplicate of you in the place where you were that's destined to die. You have a chance to live.
What the?
Oh, yeah, the past version of you, already dead. They're dying as we speak.
Listen, old man. Getting the artifact, hopefully, will redeem what the hell you just did. But you're gonna answer to me for not saving my entire troop.
Yeah. Some people just can't be thankful. Anyway, for the rest of you who don't know what this artifact is, the Book of Exalted Deeds is an ancient and powerful holy artifact, laid in with a fraction of the power of the gods themselves. Virtually indestructible. It is capable of doing great things that defy the rules of magic. One of those things is opening a gate to the material plane out of this doomed, literal hellhole, I'd wager. The problem is getting it, which is why I brought you all here.
Carix is trying to judge if he can just fly through the temporal hole.
Oh, no, you don't want to do that. That is a fractal. You'll scatter yourself across multiple timelines and cease to exist. Don't do that. Part of you might make it to a timeline, but you have no guarantee which one and how much.
So we have to play Baphomet's little game to get out of here, then.
He is very busy at the moment keeping his, he's protecting the maze, and he's trying to keep from being absorbed. The maze is more resilient than most of the other layers to how complex and magically weaved it is, which is why it's going to be one of the last layers to collapse. Fortunately, that does mean Baphomet is a little weak, as he's using all his power to keep his lair in control until he can find a way out himself. But unfortunately, the book is in the center of his maze.
Where's the entrance to the maze?
Oh, it's that portcullis right there. He points his gnarled cane at it. And then he taps his cane to the ground, and a spherical, a three-dimensional display of the maze appears before you. Only it's not stationary or static. It's constantly shifting, changing direction, dimensions, overall layout. So it's kind of spherical, but kind of like the way a water bubble is, where it kind of warps and bends. The book is inside the labyrinth. The maze's magic is particularly resilient. I already covered that. And in the book, at the center of the maze, is what we need, and we can portal out of here.
I just want to note that Megara has no idea what the hell is going on and is just wondering whether or not killing this old dude with the Morning Star would be a good idea, but will not do it. That's where she is.
Yeah, he sees the look in your eyes. He's like, I like your moxie, kid. Oh, you're one of Moloch's brats. That's interesting.
Moloch? Tina is like, who am I surrounded by?
I mean, all tieflings are descended from some sort of devil or demon, dear. That shouldn't be a surprise. You know, it's a nature versus nurture thing. Megara, are you evil?
No.
See? She's not evil. We're fine.
Oh, yeah, cool. That's great.
Definitely not evil. Very much not evil.
I knew I should have taken that feat that gives me photographic memory. I'm going to at least look over the maze as closely as I can to try and learn and remember what I can from what he's showing me.
Roll investigation first, and then you are going to roll wisdom saving throw because you're trying to memorize a non-Euclidean space.
It'll be fine. We'll start with investigation. Not too bad. Total of 20.
With a dirty 20, you are able to get like a glimpse of the first few rooms. I'll give you advantage on checks in the first three rooms to make decisions where the best way to go is. Now roll wisdom saving throw because you're trying to memorize a non-Euclidean sphere.
I have no regrets. Aha! Much better than last time. The total of 20 again.
Yeah, you're fine. You have a mild pain in your temples, but you're fine.
I mean, I live in hell. It's fine.
So do any of y'all have any more questions before the lit reality ceases to exist around us, or can we get going?
The less time I spend in the abyss, the better. Let's go.
So you know marches towards the portcullis.
Presumably the other two of you also come along.
Yeah. Muck, when we get there, marches through the portcullis.
Megara is shuffling along behind everyone because she still doesn't know what the hell is going on. I'm trying to figure this out. Can I, like, try to use my athletics to run through the maze?
Through the whole maze?
Or could I try to persuade this man to just let us do whatever without making us go through a maze? Like...
He's not Baphomet. It's not his maze. He's trying to steal the shit from Baphomet to get out of here. Like, if you ask him that, he's like, oh yeah, I'm just stuck here like you guys. This isn't my maze. It's Baphomet's maze. He's like a big cow man.
You know what? Tina doesn't trust him. The way he answered that, she doesn't like that. She's going to use her insight to see if he's lying and that he's not secretly Baphomet.
Go ahead and roll insight.
Paul, we've seen through your entire game.
If it is Baphomet, we probably shouldn't piss him off anyway.
All right, give me a second to open this guy's stat block so I can roll a post.
You mean opening Baphomet's stat block.
Right, it's 15.
So he rolled a 17, so I will say with how close those two rolls are, you suspect something's off, but he's not Baphomet. Why would Baphomet have people helping him steal from his own maze?
Okay, something's up with him, though, so he is sus, okay. I'd like to use my divine sense, because now that I know he's sus, I'm going to use it. Boom. I'm detecting.
Yeah, so you look, and first of all, the tiefling pings as a devil, because obviously. Muck pings as a devil, because obviously. And this guy pings as a fiend.
Okay. Jigs up, old man. You're a fiend.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to get out of here like you guys, and he changes into a dark-skinned man.
Is it so surprising that there's a fiend in the abyss?
I'm surrounded by fiends and devils right now.
Anyway, my name is Gratzt. I'm a demon prince of indulgence. Like, I'm just a party demon. I just want to get the fuck out of here because I want to go party somewhere that's not dying.
You want to party and then you dress up as an old man?
Because you weren't going to trust a guy who's a demon prince, were you?
Karrix is familiar with Gratzt and is very glad that this is what he's decided to dress up as.
Now the jig is up, Gratzt is going to proceed in his demon form, which changes the script I have written immensely, but that's fine.
Can I make a check to just kind of a similar sort of thing where I'm just trying to remember as much as I can because I've never seen a demon prince in person before and it is useful for my research?
Sure, go ahead and roll, I guess, Arcana?
Arcana indeed. Total 18.
And with an 18, you know Gratz is the demonic prince of seduction and indulgence. Known for parties, he's also worshipped by a lot of, like, corrupt rulers because they also like to throw lavish parties instead of taking care of their constituents. Yeah, like, he is manipulative and, like, like a party animal, but, like, you get the impression, like, yeah, he's just out to survive right now. He could probably take this by force, but you also suspect, based on what he told you, the reason he needs you all is only a... like, only a good aligned creature can use the Book of Exalted Deeds, and particularly only a paladin or a cleric could use it with sufficient power to portal everybody out of here. So he specifically needs Tina.
All right, Karrix starts very quietly dictating to his magic quill Grast's physical appearance and mannerisms for later study.
How would I use history? Like, could I check to see what I know of this dude? Like, his past?
Oh, sure. I'll even give you advantage because you have a family of infernal descent. So go ahead and roll history with advantage. So roll it twice.
Ooh.
It's okay. We keep the better roll. That 6 is not necessarily destined to be your roll.
Ooh.
That 8 is, however. You don't know shit about this guy.
He's a mystery.
Epi, we just opened up a gift shop to help raise funds to rebuild the Bard Rock. Look at this fancy new design.
I'd love that on a new t-shirt.
You are transported to a world of t-shirts, all identical. You can feel your sense of self slipping away from you as the shirts reach out and grab you and assimilate.
I cast dispel magic.
Epi, where'd you go?
Wild magic. Don't ask, it was terrible. So, where is the gift shop going to be?
Oh, well, we have two storefronts, bard.cafe.redbubble.com and tpublic.com/users/bardrockcafe, so anyone can support the Bard Rock.
You know, the coffee mug is really cute.
And that's not all we sell. We have t-shirts, hoodies, children's apparel, baby ones.
Bard Rock Cafe's gift shop is now open. Sales go to support the show. So if you want to help out and also get some cool Bard Rock Cafe merch, go check it out.
And that's everything we had so far. Epi, are you listening?
Hmm? Did you say something?
Epi, Diana, I brought you both a cup of tea. It's not Earl Grey, but I think you'll enjoy it.
Oh, I've had your tea, and it's all cups of lies.
First of all, I make the finest tea prestidigitation has to offer. Second of all, this is a new line of teas we'll be serving at the Bard Rock from now on by our partners at Many Worlds Tavern.
Oh, I've heard of them. I'm particularly fond of Sleepy Fields and Golden Root myself.
Well, look, if it's good enough for Diana, it's good enough for me. I'll have a cup of that Farthing Harbor.
Of course! Here you go. And I pour Epi a cup of tea.
Epi, roll perception to determine if the tea is made of lies.
Damn it. That's a natural one.
First of all, you are absolutely convinced Brock used prestidigitation on this tea. Second of all, you feel a wild magic surge inside you, and dozens of thirsty customers appear outside of Brock's food truck right here in the graveyard.
No worries, folks. We have plenty of tea from Many Worlds Tavern for all of you. Try a cup of Sage's Gate or Sacred Spring. Somehow I already have dozens of cups of this already prepared and steeped for this occasion.
Of course you did.
Want to brew some of this delicious tea at home? Just go to http://manyworldstavern.com/bardrockcafe and use the code BARDROCKCAFE at checkout to save 10% on your order. As always, a portion of your order supports the show. And if you're a coffee drinker like my good friend Armbar, they have options for you there too.
Brock, I'm happy for you and all, but get your food truck and all your customers off my lawn.
Sorry, Dan, I can't hear you. This tea is selling like hotcakes. And so are the hotcakes. Bye, everybody. So he walks through the portcullis, and Buck somehow phases through solid stone. The first room is not what you expect from a typical maze. It isn't stone walls, elaborate passageways, or multiple doors. Instead, you find yourselves in a tavern. You watch as everyone goes from enjoying their food and drink to a state of panic. A huge obsidian meteor comes crashing through the ceiling. Everybody make a dexterity saving throw as a giant obsidian meteor comes crashing through the ceiling on top of you.
I get advantage because I saw that meteor on my little map, right?
Yes.
Rolled an 18.
I rolled a 15.
Oh, the second die roll is much better. Thank you, advantage. It's a 21.
So far, only Tina has failed. Tina, did you take into account your paladin aura?
Did I take into account my paladin aura?
Are we all taking into account her paladin aura? We're standing pretty close to her, right?
Yes, everyone else already passed. So it wasn't an issue for them. Paladins have an aura starting at level 6. That gives them anyone within 10 feet of them, plus their charisma bonus onto saving throws.
Okay, yeah, everyone getting plus 2 to whatever you just said.
Yes, so everyone has plus 2 to all their saving throws while they're within 10 feet of Tina.
I actually got a 17.
So you just narrowly passed. How'd Muck do?
Muck got a 19.
Everybody dodges the fire and debris and everything. No damage. There would have been damage. This is the day it all started. It seems the time distortion outside is affecting the illusions in here. You'll need to find the exit to the next room. Do be quick, folks. The fire is going to be an illusion, but it's also still going to burn you. I'm fine, because I'm immune to fire.
Who just said they're immune to fire?
Grast, the demon prince.
All right, Carix dictates an infernal Grast immune to fire.
All demons and devils are immune to fire. It's a D&D mechanic.
They're actually resistant to fire. Devils are immune to fire. Demons are resistant to fire.
That's me getting it wrong.
We can cut that part out.
In that case, that one was funny. Me being corrected on things is funny, so. You see on the first floor, the owner and a goat-like tiefling evacuating patrons from the rubble. You try to interact with them, they phase right through you. It's an illusion, dear, so the people here are just memories that can't see or hear you. You see stairs going up to the second floor and a giant hole in the ground to the basement where the flaming rock is. Where do you want to go?
I know this place. And he jumps in the hole.
Alright, does anyone else jump down the hole with Muck?
The hole's not going to be my guess.
I'm not going to jump down that hole.
There are stairs down there as well.
Oh, okay.
Like, you don't have to jump in the hole. It's like a 10-foot fall. It's not a big deal. Is everyone going down instead as opposed to up? Let me word it that way.
All right, I'll take the stairs down.
I was going to say, I'll take the stairs with you.
Okay. Tina?
Tina doesn't trust Tina don't trust that. Tina's going to go run upstairs.
All right, Tina, you ascend the stairs just in time to see a human man leaping out of the second story window, an arguably safer route than going downstairs through the fire. Nothing else of interest here. Make constitution saving throws. You try not to inhale too much smoke.
I got a 21.
You're fine. There's nothing else here, so presumably you're going to go downstairs and join everyone who went to the basement?
Yeah.
Okay. Wine bottles are scattered everywhere, and the wine itself is acting as an accelerant for the fire. You see a teenage half-elf girl examining the area, spectral like the others. In the center of the basement is an obsidian tablet the full height of the basement, covered in golden text in a strange language. What languages do you all speak?
Elvish, Dwarvish, Common.
You cannot read it.
Infernal, Abyssal, Common.
Nope.
Common, Infernal, Abyssal, and Quarry.
Buck cannot read it.
Yeah, this says Abyssal, Common, and Infernal.
None of you can read the text on the tablet.
Damn.
You all get the impression it's tied in the puzzle in some way. It's the only thing of importance in this scene.
Yeah, can I use investigation to try and decipher it?
Sure. Go ahead and roll investigation at advantage.
Oh, of course. I knew I read some tiny text on that map. First roll was better, so a total of 26.
Ooh.
The 26, you recognize, you don't really know what the text is, but you do know from your knowledge of magical artifacts, this is a tablet of fate. Crafted during the time of troubles, the new tablets of fate dictate the past and present of the planarverse. You're not sure which one it is because you can't read the text, but like, this is a large mythical artifact that tells either the past or the future, and you can intuit that those celestial symbols are telling the past or the future.
Can this demon that we're with read the tablet?
Let's see what languages Grass speaks.
Surely in his massive list of spells, comprehend languages in there somewhere.
You want me to burn a spell slot? Abyssal, Common, Infernal. No, he cannot read it. Let's see if he knows comprehend languages on his spell list.
Kind of demon prince is this? Prefect Carrix is disappointed that he doesn't have a tongue spell constantly active.
He does have command, so I can make you shit your pants if you're talking shit about him.
Don't do that.
I want to know a spell that can make people shit their pants.
It's called command.
I don't remember that being on the list of optional commands, though.
The list, you can give them pretty much any one-word command. The ones in the list are, like, suggestions.
Poop!
Yeah, but the whole phrase wouldn't fit. Like, you could interpret that to, you know, be like, all right, I'm going to go try and find a bathroom grass for a little while. I'll be back.
Okay. Okay, here's the thing. Tina got something called stone cunning, all right? Intelligence history check related to the origin of stonework. Can I do it?
Okay, you have advantage investigation, yes. Go ahead and investigate it at advantage to see what you know about this tablet of fate.
15.
So you know, at least in the history of the tablet of fate, they were crafted after the trickster god Sirik killed Mistra, the goddess of magic, and then destroyed the tablets of fate. You know this specifically because the dwarvish god Morodin is one of the gods that trapped Sirik in his chair by crafting very, very tough chains.
These were remade. How did this get here?
Maybe you should investigate, dwarf. Why don't you touch it and get a closer look?
Why don't you touch it?
You're far more resilient than I.
A pseudopod emerges from Muck and reaches out towards the obelisk. Touch.
What reaches out of Muck?
A pseudopod.
Oh.
A pseudopod is just like a tentacle-like tendril in D&D. It's what, like, things that don't have tangible limbs use.
It means like fake foot, right? It's what amoebas use to reach stuff.
All right, when Muck touches the tablet, a doorway made of light opens on the side of the tablet for you all to proceed.
Touch. No.
Tina's eager to go in.
Carrick will wait to make sure that Tina isn't immolated, and then afterwards we'll go in.
All right, yeah, no one's immolated, that's fine. You find yourselves in a more typical room you would expect to find in a maze. Before you are three doors, one to the left, one to the right, and one to the center. That's it. No defining marks or anything, just three wooden doors, otherwise identical.
Mega wants to investigate the middle door.
All right, roll investigation.
I have a 15.
All right, with a 15. Sounds very quiet. You don't see any signs on the door of, like, traps or anything. Investigating the center door, you don't detect anything in particular. You hear, like, the sound of, like, gears turning in the left door faintly, like some sort of machine. The right door also is making no noise. You're confident there might be a trap of some sort on the other side of the left door with a 15. So you've narrowed it down to two choices.
Carrick says, Lemire, do you remember anything about this room?
No. Room new. I think, probably. Paul can correct me if I'm wrong.
This is just a regular ass room in the maze. Not all of them are recreations of the Bard Rock Cafe podcast.
Okay, all right, yeah.
So you narrow it down to right and center.
What is up with these doors? Are there windows? Is there keyholes? What's up with these doors?
Can I force the demon prince to go through the left door?
I mean, you're welcome to try.
I don't think we can force Grouse to do anything.
Yeah, can I try to persuade the demon to the prince to go through the left door?
Sure. Roll persuasion against his insight. He has a plus 12 to insight, and he has a 17 on the die for a 29. So when you're like, oh, hey, maybe you should check out the door, he's like, I get the impression you're trying to trick me. I appreciate your moxie, kid, but stop doing that.
Fail. Fail.
I'm going to look at the door and see if I can detect any magical influence in either of the remaining doors.
Sure, go ahead and roll Arcana.
Oh, that was less impressive. Not that bad. A 19 total.
With a 19 total, you detect no magical influence in either door. These are ordinary-ass, mundane doors. But you do detect a minor enchantment that, like, makes them shut behind you once you've committed to one.
Okay, so we can't experiment with them too much.
Do you say anything out loud about the door? The door will shut behind us once we go through?
Nah.
Okay. Tina cannot destroy every door.
Not with that attitude, she can't.
So there's gear sound behind one of them and no sound behind the other one?
Correct. If you want to roll investigation on the... there's three doors. Left door, definitely trapped. Right door and center door, you're not sure. If you want to roll investigation, you can try and intuit more about the other two doors.
Man, what's that plane that's full of grinding gears? We don't want to go to that one.
That's Mechanus.
There you go.
I'm going to investigate the door to the gears.
Well, that door you already ruled out. You're trying to investigate the other two doors.
Oh, then I investigated a different door and I got a dirty 20.
With a dirty 20, you can look at the center door, you look at the right door, and you realize the floor on the edge of the, like, you know, like that little bit that goes from, like, one side of the door goes to the other in the floor? I don't know if there's a word for that bit of flooring, but there's a slightly different color in the paneling, whereas, like, the other two are consistent. You get the impression that there might be, like, a series of pressure plates on that side, leading you to believe the right door is also potentially trapped.
There's only one door, guys.
There's only one door. Carrick has started to question his sanity.
There are four lights!
It's only one I'm going through.
Yeah, do you open the door?
Well, only if you're all coming with me. I'm not going alone.
I'll come with you.
I wait for her to open the door, but I don't allow it to shut behind her. I'll follow her if she survives opening it.
I'll put it this way. You get the impression these doors are smart enough to stay opened until everyone's gone through them. You don't worry about being separated. It's a cutscene door.
They're smart door. We're in a smart house. We're in a house of the future. Oh, God.
Yeah, everyone knows Baphomet's Labyrinth is just smart house from that one Disney Channel movie.
Baphomet is Elon Musk and this is an AI house.
We really gotta get out of here.
Fuck, we gotta leave.
So you enter an area with a series of corridors that make one elaborate turn after another, but no traps. So you have a couple minutes. Do you have anything you want to discuss amongst yourselves while you're just walking? It's just like a long hallway with a bunch of turns. No, there's no like traps or anything. You clearly picked the correct path.
Can I use that time to cast a ritual spell to get my unseen servant?
Sure, you got 10 minutes.
All right. My unseen servant, I was going to say appears, but that's literally not true. He's there, though.
Just, you know, an unseen servant is, as you might suspect, a little ghost friend that nobody can see.
That's creepy.
So one of my special abilities for being an Order of the Scribe is I have a magic book that floats around and a magic pen. So basically I'm dictating notes to an unseen servant and he just invisibly writes down my findings behind me so I don't have to carry the book all the time.
Oh, so it's not you making both float, it's just an invisible dude.
Well, indirectly I'm making them float in that it's my magic that's doing it, but not actively.
It's slightly like, oh, okay, cool, you got an invisible guy writing. It's like less like, oh, you're...
Yeah, to someone who doesn't know anything about magic, it just looks like I'm talking, and for some reason there's a quill and it's writing in a book behind me. I'm here on research purposes, so I gotta write all this down, assuming I survive.
Alright, so after several minutes, you find yourselves in a new room, a single long corridor, the wooden door at the end. You get about 10 feet from the entrance door, something appears behind you. You hear the rustle of feathers. Catch your ears. That's no good, Grat says, and you see like a little crow-like man you recognize as a Kenku, garbed in black robes wielding a farmer's scythe. They work for the Pale Man. We'd best keep moving.
I dictate an infernal. Grat's afraid of crows.
Who's the Pale Man?
The Pale Man is the thing destroying this world. He's an avatar of death. He and his minions have come to wipe the abyss off of the planar map. We call his minions the Reapers.
Sorry, so wait. So I think I got mixed up about where we are. There's a long corridor, there's a door. Where's the Birdman?
The Birdman's behind you. He's coming where you... Like, he kind of, like, followed you. He poofed into existence in the labyrinth and followed you. You're being pursued.
Is he a direct threat? Like, do I need to fight him?
So you were told fighting him is a bad idea? He is slowly approaching. Like, you know, have you played Final Fantasy?
Yes.
Do you know what Tom Berry is?
No.
So basically, this guy is slowly moving towards you with the intention of striking you dead. Like, you can't outrun him for now.
Okay.
This is the $1 billion and the snail that kills you, except there's no $1 billion. There is only the snail that kills you.
Can I use my athletics to run down the hall?
You can run down the hall. So D&D has, basically, you get your movement every round, which is, for most creatures, 30 feet. It varies. And then everybody can use their action to do what's called the dash, which means they take the movement again. Certain classes can do a bonus action, but yeah, basically you can be like, I take a dash, and you just book it down the hall. You're running.
Okay. I'm going to take a dash and just book it down the hall because I don't like birds or feathers either.
Yeah, Gratz also dashes.
I'll take the rear, but I'm also moving quick.
All right, I'll keep step.
Muck doesn't have any issues following.
You get into the next room. You enter a new tavern. Their musicians seem to be taking turns playing on a stage. The owner of the bar from the first room is playing a violin, and the crowd seems to have chosen him as the winner. And everything goes silent as a portal opens behind him, seemingly after he draws from a deck of cards. From the portal emerges what you suspect to be the Pale Man, a pale guy in dark robes. The violinist challenges him to a duel. He produces a rose gold fiddle. While the two are playing, you see the Reaper from before emerging to block the tavern entrance, no doubt the actual exit to this room. You cannot outrun your fate, a cold, calm voice says. You realize this is the Pale Man, his illusion having more life than the others. His eyes are fixed squarely on your group as he plays his golden fiddle. Shit, he sees us. The fate of this plane and all its residents is written. It cannot be unwritten. Accept your fate. The Reaper approaches you from the door, scythe raised. It's just one Reaper, though. What do?
Attack him.
Yeah, are we rolling for initiative, or are we still have a chance here?
It depends. You want to fight him? If you want to fight him, you're rolling for initiative. There's another action D&D you can do called disengage, where you can pass an enemy without them getting to attack you. You could just be like, I use the disengage action to run past this fucker to the door.
Do you think that this battle is a battle too hard to win right now? I'm asking everyone else, like, are these, because I don't know who these, like, these are all new to me. Like, are these evil villains, are they too hard all together in this one room to fight? I want to attack. Screw it.
Well,
we already dead.
Well, that's technically true, but one of us can still live. Well, let's see. Can I size this guy up? He's an interplanar creature, right? I should be able to get an idea of his capabilities.
The Pale Man or the Reaper?
I'm not going to try to fight the Pale Man. The Reaper.
All right, yeah. Go ahead and roll Arcana to size this thing up.
All right. That's pretty good. A 27.
The 27, you recognize this as... you see, like, a bunch of different magical, like, ticks and markers on this thing. One thing you recognize is... You see, like, a scar kind of, like, down the middle. And it seems like it's almost too symmetrical. You realize this thing might replicate the same way an ochre jelly would when killed. It's just going to keep duplicating every time you kill it. So you can kill it to buy yourself time, but if you kill it, more of them will spawn. It'll go from 1 to 2 to 4. So you want to avoid fighting them as long as possible. Because 1 is not that hard, but 2 or 4 or 8 might be.
All right, so I'll say we should bypass it if we can.
Let's book it. Yeah, so let's disengage, I guess. And I guess I want to try and, like, run past and maybe, like, shove him, get past the doorway.
Actually, this would be a good one for Meg. Meg, what you could do is you could roll athletics and just push him and not deal damage, just knock him down.
Okay.
Go ahead and roll athletics. Yeah, just, like, you basically you're just pushing him.
I'm pushing him. I got a 22.
Okay, 22. Yeah, no, the crow falls on his ass.
Yeah!
So he now has the prone condition, which means he has to use half his movement on his turn to stand up, which means you guys could be long fucking gone.
Awesome. Yeah, I pushed someone.
All right, so the next room, you see an obsidian wall similar to that Tablet of Fate with golden sigils on them. Only these sigils rearrange and shape into text you can all read before projecting into your mind the story of one among your number. Karex, tell the party a story of your character's life, and basically what's going to happen is the room is going to project images of this story for everyone to see into their minds.
Okay. Karex is one of very few mortals to willingly join the armies of the Hells. His reasons are his own, but this unusual situation allowed him to advance much more quickly than mortals normally would, and earned him the ire of some of his immortal colleagues. This has been a constant struggle for him, and many of them refuse to follow his orders, but he has still managed to place himself as a researcher who takes numerous trips into the abyss, such as the one that landed him here.
And so everyone sees an abridged version of you climbing those ranks, just one success after another over time. Probably a misstep here or there, but for the most part, success. That's how climbing these ladders works.
Mm-hmm.
Flashback ends, and... The light is slowly dimming. The door hasn't opened yet. You all have time to reflect on what you just saw.
What would make you want to join their army? I don't get it. Tina looks like genuinely baffled. Usually she's like a little spitfire, but for this is like she genuinely does seem confused.
The demons are a threat that need to be eliminated by any means, and the efficiency of the Hells is far superior to anything that Heaven tries to do. Now, had I known that... the Abyss situation seems to be taking care of itself. Perhaps things would have been different. But I've still found a place within the Hells that I never found on the Prime Material Plane.
As you finish that explanation, a door of light opens up, allowing you all to progress.
Well, that's enough of that. Karex walks into the door.
Tina looks thoughtful. She walks through.
Megara thinks he's a nerd and walks through.
I mean, he's an Order of the Scribe Wizards. That's not really inaccurate.
And I assume Muck just continues trudging along.
This has nothing to do with Muck's personal quest. He walks through the door.
That's fair. You find yourselves, once again, in a stone room, this time with a single door that refuses to open. You realize the room is filling with sand, falling from a stone grate in the ceiling. You have very little time until the room is full and you're buried alive.
Oh.
And that's where we're going to end tonight's session.
Oh.
No, I actually had an idea this time. We'll see if I remember it next time.
Thank you.
isn't this basically just the same thing as before?
Do you have a degree in marketing? Because I have a degree in marketing.
He's got you there, Doubletail. Your only degree's in the School of Hard Knocks.
Sure, whatever. A paycheck's a paycheck, I guess.
That's the spirit.
Thanks for listening to Bard Rock Cafe. We have the best fans. Remember to follow us on social media so you never miss an update, and be sure to check out our sponsor, Dragon Master Games, for your TTRPG needs. If you aren't already, consider subscribing to the show on Ko-fi to help cover production costs. Subscribers get special rewards like their own channels on the podcast Discord, personalized messages in the mid-roll ad spot, and more. And of course, we're partnered with FanRoll, whose wide variety of dice and other tabletop accessories are sure to have something unique to add to your table. Links to all that stuff can be found in the show notes.
Okay, now in the promo with your patented people's wink!
We did this bit already, but sure. I wink. In a podcast. And it's really good.
It's called a callback. Thanks for doing the ad read, Barry.
I told you not to call me Barry.
Until next time, everyone, rock on.